Amen. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. Y'all come on in. I'll get this out of everybody's way over here. Glad to see everybody. Have you had a good week so far here at Tulsa? All right. Great. Great. You see, it's great to go to some place where you don't have to have a keg to have a good time, isn't it? Isn't it? Isn't it? I tell you, the world has answers, and I'm more convinced the older I get that those answers don't work on just about everything. Listen, one of the things that always thrills me when I come to a get-together like this, I appreciate seeing the number of young people who come and the parents who bring them. I was invited to the Blue Ridge Family Encampment last summer, first time I'd ever been there. I tell you, I have yet to get embarrassed about much of anything. When you do this long enough, nothing embarrasses you, just absolutely nothing. I have walked into the men's restroom during the break with my microphone on. I have done everything that you can imagine. You know, I'm 54 years old. I'm combing my hair with a towel. You know, nothing embarrasses me anymore. But when that happened, I thought, you know, if I don't have a computer, I wonder how this is going to work. So, besides, I'm leaving here shortly. And let me just say this for those of you that would like to visit a little bit today. I will be honored to visit with as many of you as we possibly can. I am going to have to hustle over to the airport before too much later this afternoon to get on a plane. I'm going straight to Raleigh, North Carolina, where we're starting a seminar tomorrow morning at the Brooks Avenue Church of Christ. And I don't usually do but one seminar per week. The joke at the Antioch Church of Christ, where I'm a minister, and I've told some of you this, is that I'm the only minister there that's on staff that doesn't go to church there, because I'm usually traveling doing seminars on the weekends. I usually go out on Saturday, and most of the seminars that I do at churches are on Sundays and Mondays. I usually arrive on Saturday evening so I can preach on Sunday morning. It's a good way for everybody to get to know me and for us to visit with each other. And then we normally do two sessions on Sunday and two sessions on Monday. We've learned that that's optimal, especially if a church wants to use it as an outreach, because Sunday night is like the prime time. That's a night that most of God's kids already think is God's night, so they're going to come to church or they're going to go to a small group or something. And it's also the night of the week that more than any other night, people have been off from work. So they're kind of looking for something to do. And if the church promotes the seminar well, we supply churches with a lot of promotional material when we schedule a seminar. If they promote it well, they usually have a pretty good turnout. So it's typical for me to leave Nashville on Saturday and do the seminar on Sunday and Monday and fly home on Tuesday. Well, last week I did that. I got through in Tacoma on Monday night of this week. And because it was such a long flight, I didn't get home until like 9:30 Tuesday night. I had to fly over here to Tulsa about 8:15 or something on Wednesday morning. And today, I'm not going to get to go home. I'm going to Raleigh. I get through there Tuesday, get in home Tuesday from Raleigh. But then I've got a Wednesday-Thursday seminar next week of all weeks, and it's down in Gulf Shores. Not that I don't want to go to Gulf Shores, but I mean, it's in the middle of the week. I get back from that on Friday, and then on Saturday, I'm going out to Sacramento to do a seminar out there that I don't get back from until Tuesday. So I'm already a little bit tired. And if that computer had just now gone down, I would have had huge problems. So thank you, Lord. I appreciate it so much. Listen, for those of you that have not been with us up to this point, let me just say two or three things. Number one, there is child care available if your children are making noise. Number two, if you have a phone in here, take your left finger, push the button that says off, turn it off so we can all visit. Now, I got in front of an audience and asked them to turn off their phone a few weeks ago, and about 20 minutes into it, the phone started ringing. I looked down, it was the one in my bag. So if you forget to do the phone, I sure understand. I've done the same thing. But if you can turn it off, that would be nice. What we normally do, as I've told you, and I hate to be so repetitive, but I notice that there are a number of you here that were not here yesterday or the day before. So just so this makes some sense in context, and especially since we've run out of these red-covered workbooks that we handed out to people the first day or two, normally we do a four-session seminar. The first session is usually fairly similar to what I did on the first day here on Thursday. The second session, the ABCs of Godly Money Management, is the session that I began yesterday. We did the A and the B, the A of acknowledging who owns everything. It's a teaching on godly giving and stewardship. The B on learning how to budget. And again, like I said yesterday, I know budgets are no fun. We have a lot of fun with this. We talked about that yesterday. Today, we're going to conclude with the C, learning to control our money. Now, normally, yesterday and today's session would constitute our second of the four sessions. And normally when I do a seminar, the other two sessions that I'm not going to get time to do here are the sessions, the third one of which is the one that deals with debt. That's when I give people a seven-step do-it-yourself credit repair kit, show people how to honorably deal with their debts, get them behind so they don't have to worry about them anymore. We talk about bill consolidation loans, debit cards, how to pay off your car loan, get rid of that thing forever, and how to deal with credit cards and get out of some of this credit card bondage. Some of you in this room right now have already come up to me and told me horror stories about credit card issues that are going on in your lives. I hate credit cards. Now, I'm not telling you that you shouldn't have one. I have a credit card in my pocket right now. But we do teach four things for a Christian to do with their credit card so they cannot be in trouble with it, and four things they can do to get completely out of trouble with them, because I'm no friend of this credit card industry. Today, the average person in America, the average family now has seven credit cards, and five of those suckers are maxed out. That is the situation nationwide with people and their credit cards. The average family, as I mentioned yesterday, according to one study, today owes about $12,000 on credit card bills. This is a major issue. So in the third session, we talk about credit cards, debit cards, bill consolidation loans, how to deal with these things, how to get rid of the car loan. And then in the final session is the one when we really do look to the future. That's the one when we talk about what life could be like. The six secrets of the world's great investors. Simple things that most people don't understand. But when we apply them, like I said yesterday, they change everything from the bottom up. We talk about how mutual funds work. Most of us own mutual funds. Most of us don't really understand how they work. We may not own them directly, but we have them in our retirement account. We explain those. And also in that final session, I like to talk a little bit about the difference between God's investment approach and Satan's. So that's what we normally do with a No Debt, No Sweat seminar. Today, what we're going to do, though, is we're going to be picking up with a C of the ABCs of godly money management. I don't know about out here in Tulsa, but I can tell you that in Nashville, the good old boys love their good old cars. This guy bought himself a brand new two-seat Mercedes. I mean, this car costs more than twice what my first house cost. And he's tooling down a Tennessee back road, making about 60 miles an hour. Trouble is, he's in a 50-mile-an-hour zone when he passes the trooper. Goes right past the trooper. Trooper thinks, oh, great, I've got 15 minutes left on my shift. I don't want to mess with this guy. I'm going to pull him over, give him a warning, and I'm going to let him go. Well, the trooper takes out after this fellow. Well, this rocket scientist in his car looks up here in the rearview mirror. He sees the trooper behind him, but instead of pulling over like he's supposed to, he punches the car. He's up to 70, 80, 90. He finally gets up to 90 miles an hour when finally this brain burp of his ends, and he realizes, hey, I'm in a lot of trouble here. I'd better just cut my losses, pull off side of the road, and deal with this thing. So he pulls off. Trooper pulls in behind him. Trooper gets out of his car, walks up to this guy, looks inside of the window, and says, hello, sport. You know, a minute ago, you passed me at 60 miles an hour. I was going to give you a warning. But partner, you've run me up to 90 miles. You better have a pretty good explanation for this thing. Guy looked at him and said, officer, I'm sorry. But the truth of the matter is, it was only about a week ago when another Tennessee State trooper ran off with my wife. You're ahead of me, aren't you? And I was just scared you were the one bringing her back. Now, the moral of that story is simply this. Folks, there are some things in this world, if we're going to deal with them, we need to understand them. And at the top of that list are Tennessee State Troopers. For all of us, we need to understand our money. Now, unfortunately, this is a session when I have a lot more to say than I have time to say it in. And I always get frustrated. Do you all have leftovers night at your house each week? Does it? Yeah, we do too. I hate leftovers. Bonnie will not even tell me from week to week which night leftovers are going to be. And now, don't misunderstand, I told some of you this earlier. Bonnie's my best buddy. She's the best friend I've ever had in this world. I fell in love with her in 1972 at Lipscomb. We got married in 76. She's the best thing that's ever happened to me. But as much as I love Bonnie, I still don't love leftovers. And she doesn't tell me from week to week which night they're going to be. But I can always tell. I come into the house, walk into the kitchen, and the microwave is on. And that little thing in there that kind of turns around, it's got like six or eight little things in there floating around, and Bond's at the fridge pulling out stuff that we didn't like well enough to eat the first time, and then she popped a lid on and said, I'm going to get them on leftovers night. Well, this is leftovers night. I don't have time to give you a nice, well-balanced meal on what I want to talk about, but I will hit a few high points here about learning how to control our money and how to do some of these things differently. You might have heard the story about the old guy that was not much of a father. His son was in jail. He writes his son in jail, says, Dear son, my heart's broken. You're in jail. It's that time of the year when you and I used to plant the tomatoes together. But I'm an old man and I can't plant them and you're in jail. My heart is so sad. Love, Dad. A day or two later, his son writes back from jail, Dear Dad, don't dig up the garden. That's where I buried all the bodies. Well, sure enough, the FBI gets the letter. They swarm the house. They dig up the old fellow's garden, can't find anything, knock on his door, apologize, and leave. A day or two later, he gets another letter from his son in jail. Dear Dad, sorry I couldn't be there to help. I hope you enjoy the garden. It was the best I could do in a hurry. Well, I'm going to try to do this in a hurry. What we're going to talk about in here a little bit is learning to go from the need money. And that's what we've been talking about for the last 2 days, the need money, the money we need each month just to get by on, to the seed money that can literally rock our lives forever, that can change everything. You see, one of two things is going to happen. Steve Diggs is either going to learn how to control his money, or my money is forevermore going to control me. And that old adage really is true, that money is a wonderful servant, but it is a terrible, terrible master. And folks, like I said on Thursday, when we were talking about the spiritual implications of this, I don't want to be mastered by anyone but my God. And Christians all over the country, read that Proverbs passage that we talked about how the borrower becomes a servant of the lender, and they say, well, I'm not anybody's servant. Hey, when we're being driven by the payment book and we're scared all the time about the debts and we're fussing with our spouses, and some of you married folks in here, let me just say something. Some of you married folks in here really do believe that you're sleeping with the enemy. When we're in trouble like this, we are slaves, and it's not to God. We're slaves to our money. I don't want to be a slave to my money anymore. Listen, like I told you yesterday, I always notice when I look at an audience that there are a few folks in here that have some gray hair on top. I am very differential to all of you that do, because yours was the last generation that got the stuff that I'm teaching here right. And I have people that are in their 60s and 70s and 80s that come up to me all the time and they say, Steve, doesn't everybody know this stuff? And like I told you the other day, the answer is no, we don't. I mean, we baby boomers, those that are my age, and those of you who are younger, we never got this stuff. So every now and then I have to slow this down and talk to those of us of my age and younger in short sentences with very few syllables to try to make some points here. So here goes. There are three ways to achieve financial freedom. Number one, we need to learn how to spend less, okay? Number two, we need to learn to earn more. Number three, we need to learn to invest wisely. But number four is something else you could consider. I don't recommend it. It'll take you away from the house for 5-10 years at a time. So what we need to focus on really are numbers 1, 2, and 3 here. And again, I'm not going to have a chance to talk with you very much, or any at all actually, about lesson number 4 where we talk about investing. We've already talked a little bit about spending. Today we are going to talk a little bit more about our spending and our earning. I will tell you this though, about 90% of people who are having money problems think that their problem is this. They think it's number 2. They think it's that they're not earning enough. You know, if they're making $35,000 a year, they're convinced that if they had $40,000, they'd be great. If they're making $60,000, all they need is $70,000. If they're making $150,000, all they need is $200,000. Y'all remember back when Donald Trump got into financial trouble the first time back in the early 1990s, and the bank was trying to put him on a stipend, and he was screaming like a stuck pig, saying, how dare you? How do you think anybody can live on just $400,000? Per month. I could. But seriously, you know, if you have enough houses and cars and boats and planes and junk, you could probably run through $400,000 in a month and not even see it. Here's my point. For most of us, the biggest part of the problem is not number 2. It's not what we're earning. It's what we're doing with what we're earning. It's number 1. It's a spending issue. Now, I'll admit that if you have a family of 4 and you're making $25,000 a year, you do have a number 2 problem. You need to get more education. You need to get another job. You need to do some things differently. But for most of us, the biggest part of the problem, the biggest thing that we have to overcome is the number the number one issue of spending. And that's what we're going to talk a little bit about here. Now listen, I don't get into technical things very much. I love to sit around and talk to people about standard deviation models and all this stuff that bores most people to tears. And I know most of you don't care about that stuff. So I'm not going to get into anything really technical here today, with the exception of one very important formula. We need to understand this, because if we understand this, everything else is going to work fine. Steve Diggs needs to remember that as long as bank withdrawals are preceded by bank deposits, things are going to work out pretty well, okay? So the question is, how do we do this? And this is when we're going to look at that wolf barrier that you see coming up in your books. And for those of you who don't have a book, I'm sorry, but in a moment I will have that all illustrated up here so you can at least see it. But before I do that, what I'd like to do is this. I'd like to turn off the seminar for just a minute, okay? This is no longer part of the seminar. This is what I call a sidebar, because I didn't used to do this in seminars. However, I've learned that I need to include Steve's three-point mantra when I do this. Because it used to be that I would do the wolf barrier, and people would come up to me afterwards who had not read the No Debt, No Sweat book, or maybe they had not taken the boot camp, and they really didn't understand what I was talking about. And they'd say, well, Steve, the wolf barrier is all fine and good, but where in the world am I supposed to get the money that I need to do this thing? Well, this is Steve's three-point mantra. Now, let me just tell you something, and folks, I'm getting really serious now. I'm going to recommend a three-point mantra to give us the cash, the money we need, to literally, paradoxically, from the DNA out, change our lives. If we don't do this, some of us, we are never going to have a peaceful night. We are never going to be able to have the marriage we want, the relationships we want, or be able to give to God's church the way we want, or retire with any dignity. I'm going to recommend a three-point mantra, and I'll tell you before I even tell you what it is, two things about it. I'm not a very good salesman on this. Number one, this will probably be the toughest thing that some of us have ever done in our lives. Absolutely. It will be a terrible 1 to 4 years for some of us. Okay? I'm just going to tell you that. Number two, what I'm about to recommend is stuff that you already know. There is no smoke and mirrors, nothing brand new that's going to be you know, deja vu, or what's the right word here? An epiphany. I mean, we're not going to say, whoa, because we already know this stuff. And so I've already told you the bad part. But I would tell you that what I'm going to recommend over here, my three-point mantra, is much easier than what about 80 to 90% of all American adults end up doing through the entire years of their adulthood. Year in and year out, decade in and decade out. Most American adults do nothing. They're always stressed. They're always worried. They're always kind of ill at ease with their spouse. They don't have a clue how they're going to pay for college. They've quit giving to the church a long time ago. They don't, you know, they're scared to death. What's going to happen when the washer and the dryer both breaks and one of them floods the floor? And how in the world are we ever going to get ready for retirement? That's the way most people feel. And I'm telling you, the cancer that is to the human soul, the debilitating stuff that does, the way it destroys spiritual vigor in our lives is incalculable. And I'm telling you, this is bad. And we don't need to live like this. This is good. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to follow a three-point mantra. Number one, we're going to start selling stuff. That means we're going to sell everything. I mean, everything that we don't need. We're going to learn about the garage sales, eBay. We're going to figure out where the consignment shops are. We are going to sell everything that we don't need. Like somebody else has said, we're going to sell so much stuff that the kids think they're the next thing to go, okay? We're going to sell everything we can sell. And by the way, there's a good way and there's a great way to sell stuff. A good way, anytime you sell anything and get some money for it, that's good. But when you sell something like a car that you don't absolutely have to keep, or a boat, or a storage shed full of junk that you're not using, that's great. Because you not only get the money from the sale, but you get rid of overhead, maintenance, insurance, other expenses. You bring your cost of living down. But we are going to begin to sell with a tear, okay? Number two, we're going to cut expenses. This means what it says. We don't have money to go on that resort vacation this year, okay? We're going to go to Granny's and let her do the cooking. We're not going to spend money that we don't have. When we stop at the gas station and put $30 worth of gas in the car, we're not going to put $3 worth of Cokes and candy bars inside of us. We are not going to continue to spend money we don't have. Like I said yesterday, this means we're not going to be going out to some of those fancy restaurants for a while. And people say, well, Steve, do I have to live like that to do this? Yep, not forever, but for a period of time, usually 1 to 4 years. Next thing we're going to do, and folks, this is by far the most important of the three. And I will tell you, it's also by far the most difficult. But what we're going to learn to do, we are going to learn to work. Americans in 1938 were told a lie. We were told by our federal government that 40 hours of work was the equivalent to a full-time job. And I'm telling you emphatically, that's not true. Especially when we're in debt, we're stressed out, we're fussing with our spouse, we're unable to give at church, the collectors are calling, 40 hours is not realistic. Steve, you want me to be a workaholic? No, I don't want you to be a workaholic. I am a recovering workaholic. I don't believe in that. Workaholics are people that work 90 and 100 hour weeks forever just for the fun of doing it. I don't believe in that kind of stuff. I don't think God wants us to be that way. But for a period of time, we are going to get serious. And gentlemen, listen to me carefully. I'm talking right now mainly to you. Now, ladies, those of you that head your own homes that don't have husbands, I am talking to you. But in the traditional families represented in this room, men, listen up. I'm convinced that this is primarily your responsibility. It's time to get up, get out, and get something done. We get vertical. We don't lay on the couch eating chips, watching reruns of Andy Griffith, wondering what's wrong here. We're going to get out. We're going to get second and third jobs. We're going to get all the overtime we can possibly get. We're going to start a business, as long as you don't have to spend money to do it. If you own a rake and you know somebody with debris in their lawn, on their lawn, congratulations, you own a business, okay? If you've got a car with a back seat, you are the proud owner of a debris hauling company, okay? We're going to learn how to make some serious money. I've got a friend that owns some pizza restaurants. Pizza delivery guys that work for him are making up to $25,000 a year. I know guys that kiss their wives on the forehead at 10 o'clock at night a couple of nights a week. They're gone for 3 or 4 hours. They come back from cleaning a little office building, making another $500 to $1,000 a month. There are all kinds of things. Stack boxes at UPS. Be a whopper flopper down at the Burger King. It doesn't matter. We're going to do something to make some money. And ladies, listen to me carefully. If your husband loves you enough to do this, don't you start playing that old game of saying, oh, honey, you're just not spending enough time with me and the kids anymore. Don't go there. Listen, each other isn't the enemy. The enemy is the devil. He's convinced you that each other is the enemy. You are each other's best friend. Your spouse is the best friend that God will ever give you on the planet. And it's time that married folks start locking arms, falling back in love, making love more often, and being each other's best buddies. And when we lock arms and we become a solid force, we can change things radically. Think about it. Every one of us gets 168 hours in the week, right? Question is, what are we doing with them? I mean, we need to spend 56 of them in bed, they tell us. Okay. If you're a parent, you ought to spend some time with the kids. The studies show that the average parent in America spends less than 10 minutes a day with the kids. But let's pretend you want to be a good parent. You're going to spend 2 hours a day. That's 14 hours a week. We're now up to 70 hours. Well, what about me? What about running errands and doing stuff for me? Cool. Throw in another 2 hours a day. That's another 14 hours. We're up to 84 hours. Well, what about going to church and Christian work? Great. Throw in another 14 hours. That's 98 hours. Now, by my count, the difference between 98 and 168 is about 70 hours. We could be out working. And like I said, when we are in pain and stress at home, laying around doing nothing isn't the solution. We need to get up, get out, and get some money coming in. These are the three things that we're going to have to do to make this wolf barrier work. Now, what is the wolf barrier? The wolf barrier is nothing more than just my way of illustrating how to keep that ugly wolf on the left-hand side away from the door of my house on the right-hand side. And I'm going to show you a way to build a 10-stone wall to do that. You don't have to agree with me. You may not like what I do, and that's fine. Come up with your own progression. That's perfectly good. But we all need to have a plan that we're going to follow. First thing I like to do, I like to have some crisis cash. What's crisis cash? Well, that's that green paper folding stuff with pictures of dead presidents on it. You remember some of us used to have some of that? We need to keep some cash money around. That way, when the pizza boy hits the front door, we don't have to use the plastic. One of the kids needs a tetanus shot down at the clinic. We've got the $60 or the $70. It's not a big deal. How much crisis cash do we need? That depends on your family. Some families need $30 or $40. Others need a couple hundred. But we need some crisis cash. Next thing, and before I even show you these next two steps, let me just say, gentlemen, again, I'm talking to you. These next two steps are what I call the love steps. This is where men show their wives that they love them. Because the studies are pretty much universal on this. Women tend, and there are plenty of exceptions, but women tend to be more security conscious than we guys tend to be. And I tell men, if you love your wife, you need to check her toes pretty often. You need to look down, and if her toes are dangling over the edge of the cliff, you can bet Mama probably isn't very happy. And when Mama ain't happy, what? Ain't nobody happy. This is when we put our arms around Mama and we take Mama back from the edge of the cliff. This is where husbands show their wives that they love them. I call this wife insurance. And ladies, if you don't have a husband, this applies to you doing it. But the next thing we need to do is we need to get our Murphy Fund together. A lot of people call this an emergency fund. I don't care what you call it. It's just the money that we have around for when bad stuff happens to good people. It's for when the axle breaks in one car the same week the transmission goes out of the other one. It's for when the tree falls on the end of the house and you think, oops, I've got that $500 or that $1,000 homeowner's deductible plan. It's money not to add a few days to the vacation. It's money not to buy that internet computer. It's money for when bad stuff happens. What do we do with this money? We take this money out of our checking account. We put it into a savings account. So it's a little bit harder to get our hands on it. Maybe a money market fund at a mutual fund company. Not into stocks or bonds. This is not an investment. It's a savings account. But get it away from the checking. How much money do we need in our Murphy Fund? That, again, depends on, you know, who you are. I tell people that you, though, need to immediately, as quick as you can do it, get a few $100 in here. You need to be prepared to do anything that is legal and moral to do it. Look, I barely know my way back to the hotel here in Tulsa, but I could get a job before the end of the day here in this town that by the end of next week I would have an extra $300 to $500 on. I mean, I will haul rocks, I will rake leaves, and by the way, if you start a lawn care business, guys, this is a great idea. Don't ever give them an hourly rate. You don't work by the hour. You look at the yard and you say, I'll rake your yard for $100. And then you try to get it knocked out in about 2 or 3 hours, and you're suddenly making pretty good money, $20, $30, $40 an hour. That's the way we do it. But we're going to do something to get $300 or $400 into this thing fast. Our goal, though, is to eventually get the Murphy Fund up to about 5% of our annual income. That means if you're making $60,000 a year, you'd like to have $2,500, $3,500 in your Murphy Fund. Will that be enough? Probably not. But it'll be enough to help us, you know, when the bad things happen. And by the way, 75% of all Americans have a major negative financial reversal in every 10-year period. So be aware of that. Next thing we're going to do, this is when we're going to look at the life insurance. And again, this frustrates me a little bit because I'd like to say so much about insurance in here and I don't have time to do it. In the No Debt, No Sweat book, there's a whole section in there about insurance, different kinds, homeowner's insurance, car insurance, health insurance, life insurance. I don't have time to talk to you about all the things I wish I could, but let me just start out by saying this. I'm going to talk for a moment about life insurance, but I'm going to make an assumption that I know is not true for everybody. I'm going to assume that you've already got health insurance where you work. I'm going to assume that if you drive a car, you've got car insurance. I'm going to assume that if you own a home, you've got homeowners. If you don't, you should have renters. I'm going to assume that you've probably looked at disability insurance. I'm going to assume that if you're much over 50 years old, you're looking at long-term care insurance, okay? All I have time right now, though, to do is talk to you about life insurance. I call life insurance love insurance. And as most of us know, there are two broadly different types of life insurance out there. There's the type that the life insurance salesmen like to sell. It's called whole life insurance. Everybody's heard about this. Been around forever. Sometimes it's called permanent insurance. Sometimes it comes under other wrappers like universal, variable. I don't care for whole life insurance for most people. It's not wrong for everybody. In some cases, it can make sense, especially if you happen to be worth over $2 million and you're trying to find some tax strategies to protect inheritance issues and other things. And there are some other cases. But for most people, I don't believe that whole life makes the best sense. Why is that? It's because it costs too much. Now, the boys and girls that sell it to you will say, no, it doesn't cost too much because you get a retirement account. You get a cash value account with it. Well, the truth is you do, but the people who study these with no hip pocket interest usually come back and say, you know, the long-term returns on these whole life policies are really nowhere close to what they should be for good investing. And again, if we were going to be doing the fourth session here, I would show you how to do the investing correctly. The truth is, the reason these things cost so much is because the boys and girls that sell them to you get paid great commissions. A 40-year-old that wants to buy $500,000 worth of whole life insurance could easily spend $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a year. And that's a lot of money. The other type of insurance that we have out here that we've all heard of is term insurance. Creatively named this because we buy it for a what? A term. 5, 10, 20, 30 years. I like term insurance because it makes sense to me. It costs a whole lot less than whole life. That same 40-year-old wanting the same $500,000 of coverage, instead of buying whole life, could come over here and buy term insurance, and instead of spending $6,000 or $7,000 or $8,000, could probably spend $400 to $700 a year. And then the old advice, you buy term, you invest the difference, kicks in. And again, if we're not going to do Part B, then it's probably better just go ahead and buy that stuff over here. But if we do Part B, if we do the investing correctly, and again, I wish we had time to talk about that in here, it usually makes much, much better sense. How much insurance do we need? Well, again, that depends on who you ask. I tell people that we probably need to look at something in the range of 8 to 12 times our annual income. That means if you're making $50,000 a year, you'd like to have maybe $400,000 to $600,000 of coverage of term life insurance. Question, what about Mama? What if Mama does not work outside the home? Do we need to buy life insurance for Mama? Absolutely. We underline that 19 times. Absolutely, positively. This is when Mom and Daddy sit down together and hold hands and they say, sweetheart, tomorrow morning, if you were killed in a car wreck, financially speaking, what would that do to this family? What would it cost to replace the child care and the homemaking and the clerical work and the 97-11 things you're doing? Could we do that for $40,000 a year or 50 or 60 or 70 or 80 or not? Come up with a number and multiply that by 8 to 12 times. That's how much insurance we need to have on Mom. The good news, by the way, about Mom's insurance is it's usually going to cost less than Dad's because you gals live longer than we guys do, so it's even cheaper. But if you don't already know it, there's a price war going on in the term life insurance business these days. It's gotten so cheap that it's almost wrong not to have good term insurance coverage on our families these days. And by the way, the reason we buy insurance coverage is not for all the 97 things that these guys over here tell you that they're for. The main reason that most families need to buy life insurance is for the same reason that we would buy anything else for people we love, to protect them. We buy this to protect the people that we are supporting in the event of our death. That's the bottom line purpose for life insurance. Next thing we're going to do, this is when we're going to rock our world. We're going to do something, folks, that most of us in this room don't even think is possible. We are going to pay off our short-term debt. What's short-term debt? Well, for most of us, it's everything but the house. It's the car loans, the credit cards, the school bills, all of that junk that is mucking up our lives. It's the stuff that Madison Avenue, Detroit, and Wall Street don't want us to mess with. I'll tell you what, pretend with me, if you want to, just close your eyes. Pretend that this is the first day of next month, first day of April, and you get out of bed, the sky's blue, the birds are chirping, and wow, I don't have any bills this month. That $316 doesn't have to go out, that $219, that $112, that $209, that $74 bill. None of those things have to go out this month. Do you suppose that if that were the case, that maybe April would be a little more fun than March has been? Well, if so, I'm going to show you how to do it right here, right now. And by the way, this is when the devil starts to whisper. And he says, this stuff's crazy. It doesn't work. I promise you, it works. I have not made a short-term debt payment to speak of since the early 1980s. It works. Hundreds of thousands of people all over America have done what I'm about to recommend, not just under my teaching. This is very similar to what Susie Orman, Dave Ramsey, Clark Howard, a lot of other folks teach. But what we're going to do is simply this. We're going to line up all of our short-term debts in front of us, all six of the credit cards, the school bills, the car loans. And then we're going to start paying them off. Well, Steve, how in this world am I going to do that? Here's how we're going to do it. We're going to make minimum payments on everything except for one. Now, what most people do is this. They make minimum payments on everything, and then if they can scrounge an extra $100 together, they divide that up and put a little bit to everything. That's bad strategy. Don't do it that way. Make minimums on all of them except for one, and pick out one that you hate the very most. Dave Ramsey says, go after the one that you owe the least on. Fine, do that if you want to. Susan Orman says, no, you go after the one with the highest interest rate. Cool, do that if you want to. I just say go after the one with the ugliest green hair growing out of its tongue. Pick out the one you hate the most, get a stake in this hand, a hammer in this one, and go after that sucker and kill it dead. Well, Steve, again, how am I going to do that? Here's how we're going to do it. You remember that little three-point mantra? We're going to sell stuff, we're going to cut, we're going to work, we're going to make this thing happen. Listen, folks, this is not an issue of ability. It's an issue of desire. Moms, dads, I dare any parent in here to raise your hand on this one. If tomorrow morning you were to take your child to the doc and they told you that this child has something very, very wrong and that you need a surgery, the child is going to need a surgery sometime in the next 12 months, it's going to cost $30,000. But if the child doesn't get the surgery, the child will not live. I dare any parent in this room to raise your hand and tell me that in 12 months you won't have $30,000. I dare you to do that. See, this is not a matter of ability. It's a matter of desire. And when we get so lean, mean, mad, and focused and turn things into job one, we will move mountains, we will get things done, we will change our lives. We're going to pick out the debt we hate the most, we're going to apply that three-point mantra, selling, cutting, and working. We're going to murder that sucker. The minute that thing's gone, we're going to take the money from that and we're going to apply it to debt number two. Dave Ramsey calls that snowballing, Susie Orman calls it rolling down, Clark Howard calls it laddering, I just call it getting a financial life. I don't care what you call it, but we're going to go after number two. But remember, we're going to use the steroids, selling, cutting, and working, along with the money from number one to go after number two. When two is gone, we're going to take one and two and go after three, selling, cutting, and working all at the same time. Virtually anybody that will do this can get completely out of short-term debt in 1 to 4 years. And folks, life has changed. Life is better. What happens next? This is when we get the I don't need this job fund together. This is when we have 3 to 6 months of living expenses together. Brother, give me your first name again.
Joe.
Where do you work at, Joe?
Hospital.
Okay. Which hospital do you work at, Joe?
Freeman in Joplin.
Freeman. Joe here works at Freeman Hospital Systems in Joplin. Tomorrow morning, or Monday, when you get back to work, Joe, you walk in, and they say, Joe, come in here for a minute. And you go into the conference room, you're not real sure what's coming down here. And all of the suits are sitting there, okay? And they say, Joe, we've been watching you, old buddy, for about 6 months. You are, without question, the best we've got. As a matter of fact, Joe, we want to ask you to take over a whole new operation, a whole new corporation that we're starting. We're not going to waste your time by calling you the president. We're going to call you the CEO. Now, don't let it bother you that for the first 5 years or so, you and your bride and your family are going to have to live in Baghdad. That's okay, isn't it? I mean, it's the home of the world's only 20,000 hole golf course. I mean, you're fine with that, aren't you? They're right. At that moment, wouldn't you love to be able to look at the boss and say, hey, no thanks, I don't want any part of that? Now, unfortunately, that's not the way it's going to work for most of us. The way it'll work for most of us, we'll come into the job one day, and the boss will say, Frieda, Jimmy, come in here for a minute. And it always goes the same way. You know about the 3 bad quarters, or the merger, or the downsizing, or whatever. Just fill in the blank. 2 weeks from today, I'm going to have to let you go. At that nanosecond, wouldn't you love to be able to look at the boss and say, great, I need some time off. Wouldn't you like to be able to do that? Well, I'm going to show you how to do it. We are going to get a job fund together. And here's how we're going to do it. 3 things to remember. First off, remember this. If you're making $60,000 a year, to have 3 months of living expenses, it does not require $15,000. For those of you who were here with us the first day when we talked about what our real income is, knowing what the real income is, the net income, what we need is the net amount, not the full $15,000. We need the after-tax amount. How much is that? Probably $11,000 or $12,000. It's still a lot of money, but it's a little bit less. Next thing we're going to do is we're going to keep that three-point mantra going a little bit longer. We're going to keep on selling, cutting, and working. But folks, what's going to really rock this thing and make this thing happen is this little item right here. Remember, this is the month we have crawled out of bed. And that $312 doesn't have to go out. That $219, that $164, that $194. None of those bills have to go out because we paid off our short-term debt. Don't you suppose that if we have no short-term debt, that we could get this job fund together in pretty tight order? And now do you see where we're at? We're with that rarefied group of Americans with no debt, no short-term debt, and a job fund. Whew, life's better. I'm getting along better with my wife. I have more time with the kids. When God puts it on my heart to go on a two-week mission trip, I can do it. I'm not stressed. What happens next? This is when we get real serious about our tax-advantaged retirement planning. Now, what do I mean by tax-advantaged? I'm talking about anything that lets us put money away before we pay taxes on it. Maybe it lets it grow tax-deferred. Maybe we take it out without paying taxes. Maybe the boss matches on it. I'm talking about things like 401Ks, 403Bs, 457s, SEP programs, individual retirement accounts. Folks, these things are good, and they're getting, thanks to President Bush's signature on some recent legislation, they're getting better and better until at least the year 2010. We need to learn what we have available to us out there. If you have a 401k at work, you can probably legally put $15,000 to $20,000 in it this year. That's more than most of us can afford to put away. We need to know what's there. Most everybody in this room can open up an individual retirement account and put $4,000 away this year. If you're over 50, you can put $5,000 into it. If you're married and you both work, you can double those numbers. There are lots of things that we can do to get really, really serious. The next thing we're going to do, and by the way, well, I don't have time to talk about it. Next thing we're going to do, this is when we're going to look at the college savings plan. Now, sometimes people look at these last two and they say, "Steve-O, has that popsicle shirt of yours just melted on you? Have you got those two things backwards? Shouldn't I be taking care of my poor little children for their college before I worry about my own retirement?" Well, listen, you can do anything you want to do, but as for me and my household, that's the way we did it. Now, there was some mixing and matching, but we put the real emphasis on retirement, and here's why, folks. Folks, there is nothing wrong with kids paying for their own college. And the thing I do not want to be, I do not want to be a boomerang parent. I do not want to make mistakes now that cause me to end up on my kids' doorstep in 10 or 20 years from now. So I say, get serious with the retirement first. Think about it. As far as college goes, there are all kinds of ways to pay for it. There's a whole section in the book on doing that, but let me just hit a couple of things. Let's begin by pretending that you're rich, okay? You're rich. You've got an 18-year-old that wants to go to college. I would encourage you not to pay the whole ticket. Because parents who pay the whole ticket for their kids to go to college send kids to college who appreciate it the least, get in the most trouble, and make the worst grades. That's the truth. It's probably wise to get that kiddo to partner with you. But let's get back to the real world. Let's pretend that you've got an 18-year-old, you've never been exposed to any of this material, and you don't have a dime. What are we going to do? Well, there are a lot of things to do. For instance, let that kid get their high school sheepskin and lay out of college for a couple of years, get a job, make some serious money. That kid will go to school more mature, more appreciative, and they will do a better job. There is nothing wrong with some of these very good work-study programs that are out there. And don't anybody laugh at this next thing. One of the best ones out there is called the United States Military. They pay for college. You go into the military for a while. That's not bad for a lot of people. There are all other kinds of things. There's nothing wrong with letting kids work while they're in college. Listen, if your kid calls you from college and says, "Mom, Dad, I'm just so busy studying, I just can't work here in college." That's the same kid that'll lie to you about anything else, okay? Those kids aren't that busy studying. There's lots of time. I don't know whether we did it right or wrong, but when we had our four kids, we've got two kids now. Joshua is a minister down here in Houston with Ronnie Norman at First Colony. Megan was a children's minister, and she's going back into it, I think, pretty soon here. She's 26. We got one daughter, Emily, about ready to graduate from Lipscomb as a teacher. We got one student, one daughter left at home, Mary, and she's a high school graduate. She's going to be a high school graduate this year, going to college. The deal we had with all four of our kids was this. We told them from the time they were little, "Listen, Mom and Dad will pay for your college tuition provided you go to an approved college. That means you've got to go to a Christian college. But anything else you want, if you want to live on campus, room and board, you have to pay for it. If you'd like to get some books to go with those classes, you have to pay for them. You have to pay for that stuff." The kids knew this. And all four of the kids, all through their growing up, saved money. The first three of them, and Mary's going to learn this next fall, About 6 minutes after they got to college, they realized, even though they had a war chest, it still wasn't enough. They were going to have to do some work in college. And so they got jobs. I will never forget a few years ago when Megan called me from Lipscomb one day. She said, "Dad, guess what?" I said, "What, baby?" She said, "I'm going to get to live on campus again next semester." I said, "Great, did you get a job?" She said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Well, tell me about it." She said, "Dad, I've worked out this really cool deal. They're going to give me my room and my board. All I have to do is clean the dorm and wash the toilets." And I'm thinking, you know, I know the people that run that school. I can't have my kid washing toilets. And then I thought, well, wait a minute, Steve, what's wrong with you here? Where is this pride of yours coming from? And finally, I sat down and ran the numbers. Her little friends that were downstairs filing and answering the phones, they were getting paid about $5 an hour. You know, schools don't even have to pay minimum wage. You know that, don't you? Megan was making the equivalent of about $15 an hour. I was really proud of that kid that semester. I hugged her a lot. I didn't shake her hands very often, but I hugged her a lot. Listen, kids can work. Kids can get scholarships. Kids can get grants. And as much as I hate them, kids can get college loans. But you know what they don't have yet, Mom and Daddy? What they don't have yet are retirement loans. And this is why I'm telling folks, we do the college gig first. We do the retirement thing first. Then we look at college. Next thing we're going to do, this is when we're going to continue our retirement planning. Most of us, the truth of the matter is, want more money when we get ready for retirement. If you have maxed out your tax-protected stuff, consider things like some of these really good tax-managed mutual funds. Some people like annuities. I'm not a real big fan in most cases, but they can be good. If you're much over 50, you need to look at your long-term care insurance. Next thing we're going to do, this is when we're going to murder the mortgage. Folks, that thing's been around longer than the kids anyways. There's not much left on it. And besides, what are we doing with our money? We got our life insurance. We got our job fund. We got our debts paid off. We got retirement, college. Why don't we murder the mortgage before we go into retirement so we can travel light in retirement? And then the last thing we get to do is something, folks, that a lot of us don't even think is possible. This is where Christians, middle income class Christians, who will do things right, can become legacy builders. This is where we can leave money behind that will bless other people for years to come. Wouldn't it be cool to leave an endowment check to the Tulsa Workshop where you could bless people for generations? Wouldn't it be cool to leave money to your church with people that you know that will use it the way you want to, or maybe to a Christian college, or maybe to a mission point or something else? We can change the world as middle income class Christians when we start to wake up to these things. Now, again, we're going to stop at this point with the main part, but I do want to wrap this up by just saying something. And again, I don't know how to say this much more plainly than just simply to say it this way. In my life, I have about gotten to the point where I really do believe that about 90% of everything that counts is determined by Steve Diggs making up his mind at some point that he's just sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired. Of bad relationships, struggles with money, not walking with God the way I need to be, all of those things. There comes that time when I need to make a conscious decision to step across and get on the right side of the line, draw a bead down there on the wall where I think God wants me to go, using the gray matter that He's put between my ears, start taking one step after another, and start going God's way on things. My mama died February the 15th of 2004, just a little over 2 years ago now. But in her heyday, she was almost 90 years old. But like I started to say, in my mother's heyday, though, she was probably the winningest person that I've ever known. I mean, I remember as a kid, she'd win stuff from the radio station. She could go to a church potluck and they'd say, "Well, we're going to give away the centerpiece. Somebody's got a sticker underneath her chair." Mama didn't even have to look. She said, "I've got it." She just won everything. She'd go to the shopping center, wherever she wanted to go, whatever store, there'd be somebody pull out just as she'd get there. I never saw anything like it. Anyway, she called me one day from her home. She lived over in East Tennessee in Oak Ridge, about 160 or 80 miles away from us. And she called me one day and she said, "Steve, I just won something." I said, "Great, Mom, what'd you win?" She said, "Steve, I went down Saturday, put my name in the box at the shoe store, and I'm the winner." What did she get, a pair of shoes? No, wasn't a pair of shoes. My mama had gone bumping into the shoe store on Saturday afternoon. It was the last day of a regional East Tennessee contest, been going on for weeks. She puts her name in that box, And bless her heart, if my mama isn't the grand prize winner of the all-expense-paid trip for two to go out to Hollywood to see the Emmy Awards. Go figure. She said, well, Steve, I don't feel like going. You think you and Bond would like to go instead? Woo! I was so glad she was my mama that day. I said, yes, ma'am. We headed to Beverly Hills faster than the Clampets. I mean, we were out there. We had this Cadillac. We were going to Beverly Hills, going to Bel Air. Came the night of the Emmy Awards. And I'm telling you, it's exactly like you see on TV. Exactly. Like there's this red carpet that comes up right off the side of the street here. And on both sides are all of these people that you've ever seen on TV. I mean, everybody. And over here, all the way across on the other side of the street, this is where the police are, where the barricade's up. The photographers are shooting pictures. And behind them are all the fans yelling and screaming and carrying on. But on this particular night, Bonnie and me, we got to walk up the red carpet. Hey, Jay, good to see you again. But Dave, how you been, bud? Just having a big old time. Until about the moment we went into the auditorium. I turned around for some reason and looked back and saw something I hadn't seen before. And it literally changed the whole night. Way back here, behind the police officers and the fans and the photographers and all that, I guess there was maybe something about this height. It was maybe a brick platter that was, I don't know, 30 feet long or so. And there were a few people, maybe a half a dozen very lonely people standing on this long thing holding up a big long banner. And the banner said something to the effect, Hollywood is breaking the heart of Jesus. Whew. Now, I'm the one who doesn't think that we Christians need to be sitting around in our living rooms with our kids watching these idiot sitcoms where God's name's being taken in vain, people that aren't married or living together, homosexuality's being laughed at. Yet here I am on the high night of Hollywood walking in to congratulate the very people who make that stuff. And boy, just in a flash, Bonnie and I realized, hey, we're on the wrong side of the line here. These aren't our people. Those folks way back over there, those are our folk. Well, by this time, I mean, the herd is like a herd of people. We're already in there. And the thing's going on the air. We don't know what to do. Somebody came up to us and they said, remember, you're invited to the reception after this is over. We said, we'll be there. After the show went off the air, they brought us into a room that was probably not more than a third the size of this room. And I'm telling you, everybody that you've ever seen on TV was there. And we were all just armed to arm. Everybody. God gave Bonnie and me the words. He gave us the courage. And He gave us the opportunity. And we spent that night getting on the right side of the line. We talked to people, and you would know their names, about Jesus, about what the media could be for this nation. These were not adversarial conversations. They were warm. They were friendly. But we had to decide whose kids we were. We had to get on the right side of the line, get our feet on that red iron of Jesus, and start doing things His way. You know, in the building industry, they tell these guys when they go up on these high-rise buildings, don't lean against the wind. There's stories told the guys that will get 20 floors up above the pavement, and they're on a little narrow red iron beam, and they're up there working, and the day is progressing, and they get tired. And the wind starts to blow, and they barely even notice it. But they start to lean against that wind for support. And there are stories told of times when that wind has stopped suddenly, and these guys have just gone over the side. We've got to get our feet on the red iron of Jesus and start doing it His way. And we've got to, if we're ever going to get this stuff right, understand something that is vital. It's going to take two things to succeed. And folks, please hear me now. I am not talking about money in here now. I mean, money may be way, way down the list here, but I'm talking about what really counts. If we are going to win in life with what really counts, it's going to take two things. I define winning as having right relationships. And when you think about it, that's really all that counts. 50 years from now, most people will not even know that you were ever here. That's a pretty hard thing to think about, isn't it? Who was our president 50 years ago? They threw him out of office. But we forget, don't we? Actually, that was more like 40 years ago. You know, when we're dead and gone, I like to say when we're toe-tagged and horizontal, when we're dead and gone, really all that's going to matter are the relationships. Two things. Who did you love? And who loved you back? And if we're going to get this stuff right, it's going to take two things. Number one, it's going to take some head knowledge. We've got to get smart. We've got to learn about things. I've tried to share some head knowledge on money here. But we've got to become people of the Word. Study to show yourselves approved unto God. We've got to be people who are buried, immersed in the Bible itself and in God's Word. And we're studying and we're living for God. And folks, I'm standing here confessing as I say this that I don't do this as well as I wish I did. But we need to. We need to be with God. But there's another component to this. And I am convinced that this component is equally important. This is the head knowledge over here, okay? This is the stuff we know. I think that this other component is at least as important, maybe more important. Because when you get right down to it, Christianity is, it's not what we know, it's who we know. And I will never again apologize for it. I am convinced that God built us as people of the heart. We have got to work not just from our head, but we've got to work from our heart. God built us as people of the heart. And the trouble with this is the outside world knows it better than we do. I mean, think about it. Have you ever seen a McDonald's TV commercial where they came on TV and they try to sell to your head? Ever was? I mean, have you ever seen some McDonald's commercial where a guy shows up in a white lab jacket and he's kind of swinging his arms? He says, "Hi, I'm on TV tonight because I work with McDonald's and we want you to buy more of our hamburgers. They look great, don't they? Oh. They look great, don't they? Yeah, and they taste good. Never mind the fact that if you eat enough of these, you'll need a triple bypass. They're great. Plus, we make about 3.5% profit on every burger we sell you. Thank you very much for remembering McDonald's." Has anybody ever seen that commercial? No, and we're not going to, because McDonald's knows that's not how you sell hamburgers. Listen, I didn't see McDonald's Christmas commercial this year, but a typical way McDonald's might advertise at Christmas. They might open up in a living room, and there's this crackling fireplace. It's beautiful. And over here on this side of the fireplace, there's this beautifully decorated Christmas tree. And over here on the other side of the fireplace, there's this big green overstuffed chair. And right beside this big green overstuffed chair is a little round table. And right here in front of the little round table is Billy. Now, Billy's about 4, and Billy's putting cookies out. About that time, Big Brother comes dribbling his ball through the living room, looks over his shoulder and says, "Billy, what are you doing?" And Billy says, Oh, I'm putting out cookies for Santa Claus. He's coming tonight, you know." "Billy, there ain't no such thing as Santa Claus." And with that, Big Brother dribbles the ball out of the living room and leaves behind this crushed, broken shell of a little brother. No Santa Claus? Next scene, middle of the night. Everybody in the house is sound asleep, except for Billy. Billy's upstairs in his bedroom, holding his blanket and his teddy bear, and he's crying, "No Santa Claus. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to get up, I'm going to go down, I'm going to check. And if my cookies are gone, that proves there's a Santa." So Billy gets up in the dark house, comes down the hallway with his blanket and his teddy bear, down the steps, into the living room. The lights are all out, but the fireplace is still glowing. And Billy walks across the floor, and when he gets up to that big green overstuffed chair, his little feet glued to the floor, gets his courage up, and he walks around to the other side and looks down at his little round table. And the cookies are both still there. His brother's right. There's no Santa. So Billy turns to go back to bed. But just as his foot hits that first step, this big white gloved hand drops down on his little set of shoulders. And Billy looks up, and the voice from the hand says, "Billy, I'm sorry I'm late, but I always love your cookies. Merry Christmas." And then the signature comes up, "Merry Christmas from your friends at McDonald's." Now, which one of those got to where you live? The guy with the burger or Billy? We're people of the heart. And brothers and sisters, when we get our hearts energized, churches change, marriages that were cold warm up, children and parents learn to love and respect, job relationships improve, the money will take care of itself. Listen, it has been so good being together here. Let me, I told everybody yesterday that if we had any extra time, we've got a few, first off, feel free to leave. We're coming up, it's 5 minutes to 12. please feel free to leave. We do have a few copies of the No Debt, No Sweat book in that box back there. I told people I'd try to bring some more today, and those are what I've got left, or sitting on the table for $10 a copy instead of $20 if you want to grab one. But I told you that if any of you have questions either about money or about how we do this ministry, to feel free to stick around, and we'll do a little quick Q&A here. Does anybody have any questions or anything? Yes, ma'am. What's a good amount to retire on? As much as you can have. The people, I'm joking, the people on the radio will tell you that you can take 8% out of your money forever and ever. The actuarials tell us totally differently. You need to work on an amount, most people tell you, of 4 to 5% of what you've got saved. That means if you want to have, in today's dollars, $40,000 to $50,000, you need to have about $1 million sitting there. But over the years, you'll be able to build, to grow that at the rate of inflation. And you have about a 90% chance done that way that the money will last about 30 years. Any other questions? Yes. I can't hear you. Okay. She asked what do I charge to come to a church? Let me just tell everybody real quickly. I hate that question more than any other question. No. No, it's okay. It's okay. When I ran a business, I had no trouble talking about money. This is hard here, but let me just tell anybody of you that are interested. This is a ministry of the Antioch Church of Christ. It's overseen by my elders at Antioch. But when we started this ministry back 5 years ago, it was my advice. I told the elders, I said, listen, we're a blue-collar church. We cannot afford this thing unless it pays for itself. So every year, the budget for the No Debt, No Sweat ministry has to do three things. Pay for most of its overhead, give us an income, and give us some money to do some free things for some needy situations. So I tell everybody that asks me the same thing, churches normally give me somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000 as an honorarium to come and do the full seminar, plus my travel expenses. And the only other thing are the workbooks. The workbooks are $4, but I write them down to $2.90 a piece at the churches so they can give them away. I can't make any guarantees, but I think a lot of places I've been would tell you that whatever they invested probably has come back between increased giving, tightening up a few. Nobody's ever made a good study on what one divorce cost the church financially. But when you factor, you know, the lost ministerial time, the lost giving, the fact that you end up having to help the family, we're trying to do several things with this ministry. I will tell you that when we schedule a seminar, we supply the church with a wonderful promotional kit with all the radio and newspaper and downloadable brochures, a three-page checklist of what to do with the church starting 5 weeks out to really promote this as an outreach. And the best times to do seminars, now this varies, different churches have different needs, but in a vacuum, if a church asks me when is the best time to do it, I normally say this. I prefer to come into town on Saturday evening so I can be at church on Sunday morning and preach. It's a good way, like I said earlier, for people to get to know me and feel more comfortable with me. It's a gospel sermon, has nothing to do with the seminar. Then we normally do two of the four sessions on Sunday, usually two on Sunday evening, and then we do the other two Sunday or Monday night. Sometimes on Sunday, instead of doing two in the evening, we'll do one for a combined teen and adult Sunday school and the other one Sunday night. The reason we do them on Sunday nights is this, folks. We have learned that Sunday nights are a night that God's kids already think is God's. Most of them are going to be coming to church or small groups anyways. But it's also the night of the week that more than any other one night, people in the outside world have been off from work and they're kind of halfway looking for something to do. And if you've promoted it correctly, you can bring a lot of people in. And as a last thing, you didn't ask about this, but somebody else did. I wanted to pop this up and show it to you. I started having a lot of questions from people. Not too long after we started this seminar, people were saying, wow, we've done the seminar. Everybody's excited about it. What do you have to follow up with? And I didn't have anything. I knew what they wanted. They wanted a follow-up study, 10 or 13-week study with the videos and the CDs and the workbooks and all the materials. And I didn't have anything. And I was recommending Dave Ramsey's material, which I like pretty well. Dave's a friend of mine. His is pretty good. It's kind of expensive. It's not very biblical. There are a few Bible passages here and there, but it's really down to brass tacks. Here's how you pay the bills and all that. I like that about it. Dave and I do not agree on the health, wealth, and prosperity stuff, and I don't tell people to send on a credit card. But I do like David's stuff. The other material out there is the stuff that Larry Burkett developed years ago before he died that Crown Ministries has. I like Crown Ministries material. It's very biblical. That's what I like about it. Now, it does come from a Baptist perspective, so you have to tweak it some. My complaint with it is it never gets down to the brass tacks of you know, here's how you pay off the bills, here's how you do the budget and all that. We developed the No Debt, No Sweat Money Boot Camp. And I can tell you that easily 90% of the churches, and probably more like 95% of the churches that we go to, like to plug this in. This is a complete 13-week study with videos, CDs. There's a 30-day spending journal here. This is a cool little 8-page deal that helps people really see where all the money's going over a 30-day period. Their personal financial freedom plan. This is the new 8-page budgeting form. We put a real emphasis in this study on Scripture. This yellow thing are all the Scripture cards. This is primarily a Bible study. It's applicable for Wednesday or Sunday classes or for churches that have a small group situation. It works beautifully for that. But I'm with the class each week on video. We talk about a number of topics. Getting started, overcoming the three false beliefs that kill us, learning how to acknowledge who owns your money, developing a budget, that's when you build your own budget, how to control your money, that's when the class does the wolf barrier together, the pain of debt, let's get out of debt together, stretching our dollars. This is one of my favorite classes. This is on finding bargains and negotiating better deals. These are not the shoes, but I've got a pair of shoes at home that are just about like these. I went in the mall the other day, they were $115, they were on sale that day for $88, and I bought them for $65. When you learn how to negotiate, you save a lot of money. There's a lesson in here on teaching our kids about money, life, and God, the nitty-gritty issues of life, how to buy cars and how to buy insurance the right way, how to buy a home and some hints on how not to buy a home, the basics of saving, investing, and retiring, secrets of the great investors, how mutual funds work, and a final word. That final word, by the way, in the last class is the one where I really talk to people in the class who may not already be Christians, and I extend the plan of salvation. So those are the two components, the live seminars and the studies, and that's kind of how this ministry works. Anything else? Okay, we have a special price that we offer to seminar churches on this, but if it's not a seminar church, a church needs one leader's kit. The leader's kit has all the videos and all the promotional materials and all that. The leader's kit is $250. The student kits that come with this material plus the resource book and all this is $80. And you can talk to me about it today, or if you want, you can come to the website, stevediggs.com or nodebtnosweat.com. The address is on the back of the book, and order it anytime you want to. But we can offer a discount here if a church wants to get some of these. So just see me if you'd like to. Anything else? Yes, sir.
I want to say thank you, Steve.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for coming. Appreciate it. Yes, ma'am. Thank you.